What's going on, everybody, and welcome back into the Sorry to Interrupt podcast. It's the trifecta back with you guys here at the end of the week. We're going to recap episode 4 of Full Swing, the Tom Kim special. How we doing, boys?
What's up, Shawnee? Tommy? Nice to talk to you again. Yeah, things are great. College basketball has been great. Baseball's just starting up. What?
College basketball's kind of sucked.
It has. There's been some bad games, but also some nice runs by some teams that we didn't think were going to be there at this point.
Yeah, last night's game, the UNC game, was pretty electric.
The two games, the two late games last night were great.
Very good, yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, no golf picks from us this week, Sean, but it was it's a bullshit tournament anyways, although I did give out something on Picks Boss that everybody should go ahead and jump on, so listen to that pod.
Yeah, definitely go ahead and listen to you guys. I have not listened yet, but I'm looking forward to hearing what picks you guys have for the weekend. Tom, where do you want to start with the episode, episode 4?
Well, I got to be honest, this one, every other episode, it feels like they featured like two guys, right? I think it feels like to me, this felt like just a Tom Kim, just frenzy. You know, him and I share the same name and it was his episode.
Yeah. I think it was a really cool lens into his life as a super young, you know, only 20-year-old prodigy is what he was really been his whole life. And
he's legit a baby.
He is. And you see, you know, my biggest takeaways from the episode, obviously, is you see him win, all that good stuff. But I think just the relationship he has with some of the other guys on tour and how they talk about him and how he's not going to get the respect until he goes out there and wins a major or starts rattling off some tournaments. Kind of a little bit of friendly hazing going on because he is so young, but I think everybody you come taking away really respect what he can do. And I think that his performance at the Open with his – I forgot all about that, Tom, you know, battling that really tough ankle injury and playing some of his best golf through it for the last three rounds was it was kind of a nice peel back into last summer.
Yeah, a lot of credit to walk around on a bad ankle. I feel like I've done that many a time, and I didn't get as much credit, you know, in high school sports and rec sports as well. But I guess it's a bigger deal.
So your biggest takeaway from this was that you'd like to go back and get a little bit more credit for fighting through some high school injuries.
That was my biggest takeaway. It's like I didn't even say anything. I just gutted it out. So
you
like
narcissistic.
No, but my real takeaway, my number one, was that I think this guy is gonna win. He's only 20 years old, and it's weird because he doesn't get talked about with some of the other young guys. He's way younger than, by the way, like a Ludwig or a Zalatoris, who like those guys were in grade school when he wasn't even born yet. He's that much younger than them. And what I took away is I think he's gonna win multiple majors because he has a combo of he was pissed off even when he finished top 10 in every tournament. Like, oh, I think I should have won. But then he has that combined with the fact where he's like, I don't think I'm that good. But he fucking works his ass off to get better. I think he's going to win a lot just based off those two.
He's very self-deprecating, isn't he?
He definitely is. You know, my takeaways from it is one, just like you get thrown into doing all this stuff at 20 years old, the magazines, the photo shoots. And you take away from Tom Kim, he's just a laid-back guy. Just like wants to have fun. He's a big foodie. You got to love that.
Big
food guy. Also, that cooler that he has in his house with the wheels on it, and he sits on it and drives it around, that's so awesome.
You want that, don't
you? So awesome. I want that so bad.
I hope I get you for Christmas this year.
Oh, please. Yeah. Steph would love that. So
I don't think she would.
No, not at all. That would be sitting on the deck for the rest of our time here. But also, you know, you take away, look at all this stuff. Like, can you imagine one of us being 20 years old, being one of the hottest up and coming, like all the stuff we had to do at 20?
I could barely even function at 20.
Exactly. And it's just crazy that he's so professional about it, being so young. And just, you know, as Sean talked about, the respect that he has for the other players. But, you know, you see his relationship with his coaches and whatever. And he's like, I got to be better. He just wants to push himself and he just wants to win. That's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, Will, that was a big takeaway for me, too. Just keeping in mind, the dude is only 20 years old. And he's handling all of these different things on the course, off the course. Is he practicing enough? Is he building his brand enough? You know, how much is that ratio? Is it good or is it not good? Is he getting – also, he's mindful of the respect that he's getting from his peers on the tour. I think they showed that clip of him playing that practice round down in Ponte Vedra. Like, it was just – I think Tom, to your point, has a meteoric rise potential, and now with him just getting out there a little bit more, he's going to have a level of fame that's even higher than what it already was, and obviously it's huge. He's a global superstar, but now with this episode being out, I'm looking for him to even turn it up a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think that's really what people don't realize is, you know, we're us in the U.S., it's not a good thing, but I feel like we sometimes come off like we're the only country that exists. And he is so – him and you guys mentioned a couple weeks ago how much you love Hideki. Those guys are like fucking LeBron and Michael Jordan in the countries that they're from. And I just feel like as America, they just don't do a good job like representing how they're – what's the word? How they're treated in their other countries.
Well, how they're viewed, really.
Yeah.
Because he's from South Korea, and I've already heard that he's an absolute stud, superstar in South Korea, kind of like how Matt's what's his name Hideki is in Japan. It's like, and then he comes here, and it's like, oh, look at this new guy. It's like, no, this motherfucker was a prodigy in the country where he was from. Like, he's been doing this shit. He turned pro at like 10.
Well, we do that with MLB players, too. I mean, when Ohtani came over, when Matsui came over, when Ichiro came over first, Hideo Nomo, it's like, wow, these guys are so young, they're good. It's like, motherfuckers are already Hall of Famers in their previous countries' pro leagues. Like,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah, Ichiro was a hit leader in Japan when he came over. It wasn't like he was like, oh, look at this new guy.
Yeah, he almost had like 3,000 hits in Japan.
Yeah.
So, no, I that's the only thing that makes me – it's kind of embarrassing for me as a country, just like how we're just like, yeah, the rest of the world doesn't matter and how ignorant we are. But that was another observation where it's like, this motherfucker is so famous already around the world, and we just – everybody's just learning about him. And then for me, it's just like it feels like he – I kind of get the vibe that he like didn't have childhood because he was just golf all the time. He's like one of those guys.
Yeah, it kind of did give off that vibe a little bit that, you know, he's like, oh, when my dad and my brother were at the golf course, I was there too, and I was only four. I was like, what, four?
Yeah.
Yeah, but when you're a prodigy, that's kind of how it is. I mean, we remember absolutely. Tiger. I mean, I think the famous footage of him, you know, swinging the golf club at 4 years old, 3 years old, or whatever it was. Like, this is
if you guys haven't seen that HBO doc, should check it out. By the way, the Tiger Woods one, the two-parter.
Oh yeah, I still never saw it.
Yeah, it's a good one. There's a little bit of bullshit, you know, the mistresses and whatnot, but the golf is incredible. But I mean, yeah, I understand all that, but it's just it harkens the question where obviously I would love for either my daughter or my son or whatever they are to be a prodigy, but it's also like, is it best for the person?
Yeah, I mean, it's what the. Especially over there, and if you heard stories or whatever, I think it's more what the parents want. But I think he wanted to play golf his whole life too, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, his dad played golf, his brother played golf, and, you know, you see that special skill at a young age, and he loved doing it. And the other thing that I take away is, like, I think he's one of those golfers on tour, which is very cool to see, that I don't think he gives a shit what other people say about him. You know, he goes to find his ball, he comes out all muddy, and he's like, you know what, fuck it, I'll just jump in the creek, it's fine.
Yeah, that was great. That because was awesome. You saw Rory in the clubhouse watching, like, what the fuck is this guy doing? It's almost an embarrassment. But Tom Kim's like, I don't really care. Like,
he wanted to save that stroke, man. It didn't work out in his favor too well, but he wanted to save that stroke.
Yeah.
No, yeah. He's another guy where it's like, I could see you guys adding him to your foursomes. Mine's already locked up at least for now, but yeah, he's a lovable guy.
You couldn't have watched this episode and not fallen in love with him. I think
it's
very similar to how obviously very different stages of their careers in life, but kind of what Joel mm-hmm. Damon had last year, right? Mm-hmm. But Tom, I want to go back to your first point and your first big takeaway. Do you guys like the fact that he was highlighted in his own episode without another player, or do you think that they should have brought another spotlight in too?
Go ahead, Will.
Oh, so I think it's actually a very good thing because as Tom brought up about, you know, how our country is like blind to the rest of the world, it was kind of like get to know Tom Kim when the rest of the world already knows about him and it's time for America to learn about him. So I think it was pretty cool. That was just all about him. And you just got to focus on him and get to know him because he's going to be on this tour for a long time.
I'm in agreement with Will. There's probably a lot of variables if you think about it from the Netflix side, where maybe he just gave them a lot more time, or they got a lot more good footage out of him where they could make it a full episode. You don't know how they're cutting these things up. And he's right about the explaining thing too. They kind of had to spend the first, like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes just telling everybody kind of who Tom Kim is, who didn't know, and then getting into it. So it was a really well-made episode. I would definitely say something if, like, the last 20 minutes or the beginning felt a little slow and, like, they just stretched it. But I think there was plenty of meat on the bone there.
I couldn't agree with you guys more. Absolutely. And, Tom, that's well said. I don't think you could have highlighted anybody else without making that about an hour and a half episode. And obviously they're trying to keep each to about 45, 50 minutes. So yeah,
I wouldn't mind an hour and a half.
He deserved his own spotlight and he got it. And I think even the casuals now they're going to be tuning in to tournaments a lot more frequently if he's atop that leaderboard.
He's listed at 6 foot on the internet. Do we believe that?
No, he looks smaller than 6 foot.
Yeah, I don't know if it was just bad camera angles or maybe he just surrounds himself with really fucking tall people, like 6'5 and above, or else don't come near me, but he seems short.
Yeah, I mean, hey, the camera can be deceiving, I guess.
No, true. He just goes out there and plays his game. He's not going to outdrive a lot of people. He was middle of the pack, as I said in the episode. But it's all about his short game and his 100 yards and in, which is very impressive for a 20-year-old, no less.
Now, my next question, I could have asked this during any part of this series for you guys, because for me, it didn't make me watch it more. I am already locked into most golf, unless it's a slow weekend, and I know what's going on. But do you think, Sean, I know for you, you're just getting more into golf because we're doing more golf, so this more applies to Will, but you can answer too. Do you feel that the first 1.5 seasons of Full Swing has made you pay attention to golf more, pay attention to more players, and just watch and take in more golf?
I think it definitely does. I think it's huge for a casual and not like somebody who watches almost every big tournament from Thursday to Sunday. But like getting to know these players that, you know, you hear every once in a while as a casual and getting to know who they are, and you're like, oh, wow, this guy's actually pretty cool. And then before you know it, you're logging on to your PGA Tour app and you're like, oh, where's Joel Damon at? Where is he? How's he doing?
Yeah, Joel's obviously the biggest example of that where I knew who he was just because I know a lot about golf. But like, guys, did you know who he was before the
I knew who Joel Damon was.
But did you know him? Like, did you like him?
No, did I know him? No, not
exactly. So now you love him.
Yeah, exactly. So now I'm checking it's a rainy Saturday here, and I'm like seeing where like Tom Kim is, where Joel Damon is, you know, guys that you know, before Full Swing, you're like, okay, where's Rory? Where's Tiger when he plays? And where's Spieth?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know, so now you're checking all these guys that you're learning about, and I think it's pretty cool for the game of golf.
I agree 1,000%. Like, what's the biggest goal of this series? It's to highlight individual players in an individual sport while also giving you inside access of what it's like to be a pro on the PGA Tour through the ups and downs, right? So, yes, informing the general public a little bit more on the ins and outs of the PGA Tour. This series has coincided, obviously, with the state of this tour being in absolute flux and players leaving for LIV and then the balance of power and a potential merger and all that. So you got the drama as well. I do think it definitely is going to take the people who are general and very casual fans of golf to know players more. And that's, you're going to have a rooting interest in certain players individually because nobody's watching the PGA Tour because they love the PGA. They love the players on it and they'll root for certain players on it. Like, I think the NLU guys say all the time, it's like, you have to have somebody to root against because it's like in baseball, it's like, yeah, I just fucking hate the Brewers. Why? I don't know. I just fucking hate them. Oh, okay. In golf, it's the same thing. In tennis, it's the same thing. In these individual sports, you have to kind of have people you love, people you root for, people you hate. I think Full Swing will show that there's some players out there you take away from the fact that, I don't really like this guy that much. Or you're going to have something like a Joel Damon or a Tom Kim where it's like, oh, shit, I'm going to root like hell for this guy outside of the regulars, like your Rorys and your Scotties and your JTs and your Spieths. So, yeah, I think it's doing a great job with that. Tom, it's definitely helped complement all the extra golf I've been watching in the last 15 months.
A little context as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The only thing I have to say to add to it is I want my credit, Sean. You alluded to it that golf is in so much flux. I want my fucking credit.
What a goddamn genius you are.
I mean, I'm going to have to put out the tape of me a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, saying exactly what everybody's saying now to fix golf. Let's have all the big tournaments, finish it off in the summer, at the end of the summer with the Open, and then move into team play. I mean, why am I not being paid a salary just to make these suggestions? I really should be the sports
czar. I mean, he was spot on, Sean. He was spot on.
Hey, I texted him back. I said, this is, I said, I'm pretty sure they listened to you and they stole it from you.
Well, if they did listen to me, if they didn't listen to me, they should. They should listen to us. And if they did and they didn't give me my credit, listen.
You have the right to be salty.
Salty? Absolutely. I'm calling a lawyer.
Sue. Yeah. Sue the shit out of them.
Trademarked by Sorry Sports.
Yeah, like, yeah. My idea was trademarked. That's how that works.
Yeah.
But, all right, boys.
I'm just glad Will's not our lawyer.
No.
Yeah, thank you, Will.
Yeah, nope.
Listen, stick to college basketball and your hot takes, and then we'll be all right.
Yes.
All right, boys. Well, everybody, listen. Follow us on Twitter at Sorry Sports. Like and subscribe. Will, you want to give out your Twitter handle? Let's get you some more followers.
Yeah, sure. It's W_Smith1124.
He only has six Twitters out there, guys. So just sift through it.
And I love the cowboy avatar, of course.
Yep.
Yeah, that should never change. And then I think I'm TBochino94 on Twitter. Formerly D Trump Swagder, but then DT won the presidency, and I felt I needed to change my Twitter handle.
Yep.
All right. So we're going to be jumping into Curb soon. So enjoy the rest of the pod, guys. And Will, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Good talking to you, Will. All right, guys. We're right back. That was a lot of fun talking about Full Swing. And now, Tom, we get to talk about Curb. I got to tell you what, man, you were so right in assessing how this season's going. It is easily one of the most fun. And, you know, between the 9/10 properties, 9/10 of the law, to leaving the cheese in Lewis's car, to do you have your Conan clearance? Have you ever had to get clearance to talk to somebody?
I mean, yeah, of course. I think everybody does. But I'm not Larry, and I wait for sure clearance. I don't just jump the gun and assume.
Well, you can't. You know what assume stands for.
I'm shocked that Larry would trust somebody that much, because I'm not that trusting. Of anybody.
Also, yeah, you knew Lewis was going to screw him.
Oh, of course he was. And then you didn't even mention the fucking colostomy bag.
Oh, well, come on. We haven't even gotten there yet. We're about a minute in.
I mean, listen, to go off your original point, I think Larry, this might be the end, because Larry's fucking empty in the tank. If he's got anything left, then he's just the greatest, funniest man ever.
Oh, my God. Well, he just is going for the jugular with everything. You know, even with the valet tossing and throwing, dying on that hill to fire his lawyer over that, and the fact with the cheese, like, it's great. It's you're right. It's emptying the tank, because I don't know where he could possibly go from here, especially the characters too. I mean, is there another season of wardrobe options for Susie? Like, Jesus Christ.
She might just have to come out every episode naked if they do another season. I mean, it's incredible. The wardrobe person must just have a ball when they get to pick out her clothes.
It's got to be the most fun fucking job, because she'll wear anything.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure Larry's just like, just fucking pick out whatever you want. I don't even care. Yeah.
I love the absolute look of terror in Larry's face when he got the text from Jeff's lawyer. And it's like, oh shit, Susie's going to find out. Like, they're mailing to the house.
Oh, yeah.
And they're sitting there with the band-aids on their eyes.
I love that that's the first thing that comes to mind. Like, you're going in for a minor surgery, and you're like, oh, I got to change my POA here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, 3% chance.
Listen, that's a lot bigger than one, so I don't really blame him on that. But, I mean, the only thing I will say is, and it's looming over all of our heads, it's like, Richard just is, it's tough to see.
Well, that's I think, the thing that you have to kind of try to separate when you're watching this, because a couple weeks have passed now that he's passed, and you're watching it, and he really is in just brutal shape. And I'm thinking about what a gauntlet it must have been for him to get through some of these scenes, dude.
Yeah, and Larry must really appreciate it, although he's not very good at saying those kind of things. But I mean, yeah, it's been an electric season. And the only thing I'm waiting for is the other shoe to drop. I was disappointed we didn't see Vaughn in this one, I have to say. But I am waiting for the other shoe to drop with that alcoholic ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, and I'm sure that Funkhauser's coming back. I mean, it's just...
No doubt about that.
Every episode is going to have a couple of different plots, and this one was obviously about, you know, getting the clearance case for Conan and the court case, and then, but that is great too. Like, even just the bag and saying like, well, at least you don't have that, and it's like, no, I actually do. Like, could you imagine just saying that to somebody?
the weirdest thing to say. So absurd.
Like, what are the fucking odds of them actually having that issue?
It's just like, funny. Oh, well. It's the only person on earth that would even think of that whole scenario is Larry David. Like,
of course.
Imagine saying that of all things to someone. It's just it's crazy. But I'm looking forward to the alcoholic girlfriend coming back. And then is he really going to carry this out to where he goes back to whatever Atlanta, or if he actually goes there and has this trial?
Is he gonna end the season and the series in prison?
That would be something.
I mean, that would talk about tying Seinfeld back together, because he's had a lot of fun in just the public spaces and interviews talking about how much he loves the fact that everybody hates the Seinfeld finale.
Yeah. No,
and
he does.
He's going to end this series in probably a similar way.
He's like, going to piss some people off.
Yeah, he's going to do it the way he wants. And that's just what he does.
Which, you know, and we talk about endings and we've gone over this before, but like, I don't get the whole... maybe people are typing it up for clicks, but like, what's the whole getting upset about the ending outside of Breaking Bad? Like I said, they're really like, it's tough to end a show that you love so much.
It's also tough to end a show where there's so many moving parts.
Yeah.
It's
tying up so many loose ends, and it's like,
right?
No, I, and you're right. People are going to complain. Me, I'm like, I enjoyed the show while it was there. I'm sad it's gone. I don't really care about the ending. It was just part of the show to me. But then I just hate the articles like, this is what you should have done, or like the people interpreting what happened. Like, just let it be. The same thing with The Sopranos. It's like, make your own ending then. That was the genius of the writer.
But, you know, the thing about Curb that's unique is, and Seinfeld too, obviously, is the fact that each individual episode kind of has its own plot line.
Exactly.
It's not
yeah.
following like a chronological order of a series. Like, yes, there are certain things you have to
well,
know.
Well, I would say
characters.
In Curb, there's a lot more, like, there's a couple, like, episode, multiple episode long themes, and then even a couple season long themes.
Well, every season has a purpose.
But,
in
you
it
know, Seinfeld,
Atlanta.
Seinfeld, yeah. I think you could just watch it out of order, and it would be not as good, but almost as good as if you just watched it all together, because every episode is so different.
Really, the only things you need to know in Seinfeld is, like, originally, Jerry and Elaine were a couple and a love interest, right? Now, that lasted about 2 seconds, but you do want to have that context mm-hmm. as you're following around, because it's like, oh, why are they just friends? You want to know, like, the impotence of, you know, Jerry and George's relationship and how Kramer came into the picture.
Newman.
The parents, and Newman, of course. And you have all these auxiliary characters that sometimes pop in and out, you know, from season to season, episode to episode. But there's not really a chronology outside of maybe a couple. Like, I think of like when Kramer moved out to LA, there was yeah. like three or the pilot. Remember, there was like five or six episodes that were directly geared to them making the pilot for NBC. But every Curb season kind of has its thing, but they're not necessarily going from season to season like you have in a drama series like a Breaking Bad or
yep.
a Sopranos.
No, I completely agree with you. And it's just, it's so unique because it's not a tough watch. Like, it's not one of those shows where it's like, I don't want to watch this before I go to bed because I'll be up all night. But it keeps you locked in the whole time. It's like, just the perfect 40 minutes of television.
The best thing that Larry does, whether he was a writer on Seinfeld with Jerry, of course, or when he's been doing Curb for the last 25 years, is the fact that he plays on all the intrusive thought that every human being, no matter how altruistic you want to sound, or, of course, I would never say that. Of course, I would never think that. What are you, crazy? That's terrible. He plays on all of that, that every single human being who's had these kind of situations or run-ins, maybe not exactly, but can compare to. And that's what's so great about it is, of course, we've all been in a situation where it's like, oh, fuck, I feel bad for this guy that I, of course, just by happenstance said something inconsiderate. I'll buy the car for him or from him. You know, it's like, I guess I'll buy this guy lunch. I didn't really want to, but I kind of fucked up there. And, you know, you're trying to justify everything to yourself. But, you know, that's what makes Larry great is he doesn't. He is truly the most selfish human being of all time, and it's beautiful in the series.
It is truly beautiful. What was the last thing? What was the? I'm gonna have to start asking for that if I buy another used car. What was the discount that he was trying to get? Was it a smell discount or a smell?
It was a smell discount because Lewis had long COVID.
Yes,
and he brought Larry in Larry to didn't be like his smell detector. And yes. It smelled like old cigarettes and everything because it's an old car, the old must. And he was saying, listen, there's old cars have some must. There's good must. There's bad must. This is bad must. And wants it $3,000 off, but ends up paying full price.
Of course.
Because, of course, and, you know, I just marvel at the people that Larry gets. Like, you get Conan to just play this pompous version of himself who's just an absolute asshole and pretentious as all hell. And then you get Steve Buscemi to just play this random role as this guy.
Yeah, like a 10-minute
for this
throwaway.
Episode.
Like, well, yeah, what? And you know, that's the other thing about this show is that, and something like this will probably never happen again, is there's not too many people that make these kind of shows that have the kind of pull that Larry does.
Oh, well, God, no.
Which is another reason
not.
That makes it so unique.
I mean, like, that's the thing is last season too. I mean, he's able to get a couple of episodes around some of these guys where it's like, what is he doing in this series?
He had the entire Seinfeld cast on for a little bit, if you don't remember
He had like three episodes with Rosie O'Donnell, both trying to date the same person. Like, that's really hard to do.
Yeah, but he always finds a way to land that plane safely.
Oh, he does. No, he's the king, and you're right. I think you said it perfectly. He's emptying it out, man. This is it. He was going for the jugular in this season.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to what he does next, but more importantly, I'm looking forward to the rest of this season because we have two or three episodes left.
I don't know if we actually have an exact number. I don't think he's actually released it. I think it's just there's going to be an episode.
That's very much expected.
We're going to wait for the next episode.
It's never going
to
come.
And it's never going to show.
Well, I honestly thought that happened to me this week because I can't even figure out. I went on Sunday night and it wasn't up yet on my HBO thing. And I'm like, where the fuck is it? So I don't know. But I found it. I found it before we had to record. So listen, you and Will will be back tomorrow.
Before we go, did you see what I retweeted from the Curb post?
No, what was it?
So the woman who Richard Lewis was picking up for as his date for the end of that episode with the cheese in the back of the car, that was his real life wife.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. It was his wife in real life, and she did an unbelievable job just in that one little scene. And that came out this week. So I thought that was very eerie, but also really, really cool.
Oh, would you look at that? Her name is Joyce Lapansky, and they were married for 19 years, 2005 to 2024. So good for her. She did do an awesome job. I think I could do a good job on one of those cameos.
Oh, for sure.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I don't doubt that for a second.
Well, thank
you. Larry has another project. Give you a shot.
Yeah, well, hopefully we blow up by then, and I'm a little more well-known. Maybe we can make it happen.
That's the fucking plan, man.
That is the plan. And the other plan is tomorrow you and Will are going to be recapping, what are we, in the Sweet 16?
Yeah, we'll be recapping the Sweet 16.
We don't even have to talk about UConn. I mean, let's just pencil them in.
I'm not doing that yet.
You're such a fanboy. Like, yesterday you're like, oh, really nervous. What, did they win by 100?
Well, at halftime it was like a 9-point game.
And then they come out like the Golden State Warriors, the 2017 Golden State Warriors.
You have
and just
to
murder.
Understand that there's different sides of this. If it was any
I don't
other
understand
team,
it. I've never had a college basketball team that was good.
Well, Will and I talked about it on the pod. I'm not going to bring this up to you, but we and I don't usually talk college basketball that much together. I feel like it's mostly just been Will. But I'm not used to this with UConn either. It's not like this is a team that's had these years where they're winning 30 games, 33 games. Like, the Kemba year, the 2014 team, even last year's team to a certain extent, like they were not, they weren't this. I'm not used to the
I guess every, you have to go back to 04.
Yeah, it's not, I'm not Mecca, used to that. Every, yeah, Mecca and Gordon and Talik. But the, you know, it's not like Duke where every 3 or 4 years it's like, yeah, no, this is what we expect because we're Duke. This is what
well,
we expect.
Well, I don't know, man. You guys are the new blue blood.
There, but, we might be getting there, but got to win tomorrow. But yeah, Will and I will be recapping. We'll be spending more time on the other games, not too much on UConn. We'll be previewing the Elite Eight. And then obviously Sunday night, we'll be back to recap the Elite Eight and look ahead of the Final Four.
Well, there you have it, everybody. Enjoy the weekend.
Enjoy the weekend, everybody.